right. At what point in your early marriage did you affiliate with the synagogue? And which one?
Well, gee, I belonged to Rosh Sholem Temple, I guess when I was in medical school. Beverly and I were married in a conservative temple in Indianapolis, but when we came back to Pittsburgh, we immediately affiliated with Rosh Sholem. We've been members of Rosh Sholem ever since. It was sort of a culture shock for Beverly at first, but she got used to it, finally, I think. And
who was the rabbi then?
Friedhof is the rabbi. I started to say, and I just wanted to finish that, when I first went into practice and Margie was 5 or 6 days old, the only way, and I was covering for this pediatrician in Mount Lebanon, I knew nothing about Mount Lebanon, and he used to make house calls, period. He very seldom used his office. I was lost for 3 weeks, and the only way I could spend time with my wife and new baby was in the car. So they used to make house calls all over Mount Lebanon with me. And there was our baby in Beverly, and we had a marvelous 3 weeks, we really did. We look back at it and laugh to this day. And then that was the start of our practice. In those days, I was asked to cover for him. I didn't ask him how much he was going to pay me. He didn't tell me how much he was going to pay me. It was a different age. There was no contract. There was no nothing like now. And when he got back, he told me to keep a list. And I kept a list, and his nurse kept a list of everybody I saw. And I didn't add a thing up. I had no idea what he charged even. And I'll never forget, at the end of the month, he sent me a check, and I almost choked when I saw the amount. It was a magnificent amount. And he was just so thankful that I covered his practice. And we had never mentioned a dollar mark at first time.
What was his name?
His name was Andy Wunderlich. W-U-N-D-E-R-L-I-C-H.
I didn't get W-U-N-D-E-R.
L-I-C-H. And Andy Wunderlich. Mm. A marvelous guy.
Wunderlich. Yeah.
Wunderlich.
What you're saying is what it means.
Uh-huh. Okay, can we get back now to your early Pittsburgh religious life? You say you were members of Rosh Sholem very early. Were you active right away?
Yeah, relatively so. Beverly became active at that time in Ort, all of her friends. She was extremely active in Ort. She was active, I guess, in National Council of Jewish Women at the time. She was active in Federation from the very beginning, as I was. And even in those days when we were trying to scratch out a living and busy as hell building a practice, we were very involved in the Jewish community and ended up in the medical community also were very involved in the various organizations. And Bev spent an inordinate amount of time with the organizations. Trying to think of what other, I guess Ort was the biggie. Wasn't that the biggie at that time?
Or in Technion.
And yeah. But Ort was her,
yeah,
her primary
mostly.
Thing. I remember Phyllis Sachs.
How about the Hospital Aid Society?
No. I had an experience with Montefiore before it was fashionable to have experiences with them. And we had never been involved.
Do you want to talk about it?
No.
Okay. So your social life, I assume,
social life was
around
marvelous.
Tell us about it.
Well, there were a lot of young people. Fifth Avenue at that time, every apartment, now they're all old people like me. But in those days, they were all people with little kids. And every building from Aiken on down to Highland had 3, 4, 5, 6 newborns. And we became friendly with an awful lot of people all along the way, and Beverly did. And it was just a nice way to, quotes unquotes, grow up. And we had a great time. We didn't belong to clubs and couldn't afford to. And we had a lot of friends.
Were they not all Jewish? Or were they mixed Jewish?
99%.
were.
Yeah, our medical friends were not Jewish, but our, except there was one couple we were very friendly with. He was a resident. I think I mentioned him from Korea, from Greece.
No.
Charlie Papadatis.
Belt.
Yeah. Costas Papadatis.
What his first name?
We called him Charlie. His name was Costas.
C-O?
C-O-S-T-A-S. Papadatis.
P-A-P-A-D-A-T-A-S.
Papadatis.
P-A-P-A-D-A-T-A-S.
Charlie had graduated from University of Athens, and his wife was from Egypt. Her name was Clea, short for Cleopatra. And she was sent by her parents to Greece to be educated. And they got married, and when Costas finished his medical school in Greece, he went to Boston. It was a Boston Children's Hospital. Then decided to have further work in endocrinology and went to Johns Hopkins. And then was to finish off his endocrinology in Pittsburgh, came to Pittsburgh. And Dr. McCluskey, at that time I was senior resident, and Dr. McCluskey said, Howard, you will teach Charlie something about pediatrics in the real life. And you're in charge of him in the emergency room and outpatient department. And Charlie and I became very, very good friends. And in those days, we were on every other night. So the girls were sort of left on their own. So Clea, the Egyptian, and Beverly would do their laundry together and a lot of other things together. And then about 20 years before we saw him again, and we were on a yacht trip with very close friends of ours from California who were nice enough to, and who have been nice enough through the years to invite us on their chartered yachts as their guests. And there were 10 of us at this time. And I wrote to Charlie, or Costas, and they insisted we have dinner with them at their apartment to be introduced to the ethnic foods of Greece. And it was like we'd never been apart. They were so friendly with us. It was a marvelous experience. And we were back in Greece again some years later and spent some time with them. Most of our friends, except for our medical friends, were Jewish, as they still are. Beverly's classmate from and sorority sister from IU in Bloomington was Marcella After. She was Marcella Moravitz. And when we moved back to Pittsburgh, they ended up going to Baltimore because Alan was doing some work in preparation for the chemical business he was going to go into here. And they were away for our first couple years. And since they've been back, they've probably been our very closest friends here in Pittsburgh. But we've just had I can't even begin to name all our friends because we have some marvelous friends. We've just been a part of the Jewish community as well as the general community in Pittsburgh for a lot of years. It's been a lot of fun.
Can you tell us some memorable moments in your profession, in your practice?
Oh gosh, I could go on and on and on with that, with the sick kids. And probably the most memorable thing anybody ever remembers is when they suddenly realize they've arrived and their practice is there. Harold Cohn and Bill Duncan, who were obstetricians in town, had tried for a couple of years to marry Ernie Michaels and me together. And I was always, I guess, a stubborn guy and a proud guy. I wasn't going to join anybody as number two. And it was a matter of when I pull up even, maybe I'll think of being a partner with someone. In those days, you didn't have groups like we have now. Everybody was a single. And finally, things were getting pretty rough, very busy. And I pulled up even with Bernie. He was 8 years ahead of me. And we joined forces. That was the first memorable thing.
So it was a real partnership?
Oh, yeah, right from the beginning. We opened this office. Mm-hmm. He was in 3500 and I was in 3347. We moved here. And then after about 4 years, if one of us went away, the other was really killed. And we needed a third one. So Dick Paul joined us after, I guess, 4 or 5 years. And then my son-in-law joined us. Each time someone joined us has been another thrill. My son-in-law joined us 6.5 years ago, Paul Dubner. And then a young lady joined us 2 years ago. She's part-time, she's 60% time. So there are 5 of us now. So it's sort of a thrill to, and it's still a personal practice. We don't like to have it, it's not a clinic. Each one of us, we practice what we call longitudinal medicine, where each one of us is responsible to a family. But if I'm busy, or I'm making rounds to the hospital, or I'm away, the other people are still around, and it's not like you're going to another office or another practice. You're covered by someone who is part of that practice. And it's worked out beautifully for us.
The young woman's name?
Chesick, Lorraine Chesick.
Lorraine
Chesick,
C-H-E-S-E-K.
C-H-E-S-E-K. And she's raising young children, so she's just 60% time, which is perfect for us.
Now, I know during your professional life, polio vaccine became a reality. Meningitis is no longer the threat it was. Are there any other great things that have happened that you feel...
Yeah, and
you're part of. And
in infectious diseases, we've all grown up with infectious diseases, with the various antibiotics and what the antibiotics can do, how to treat them with respect, but how to use them when you need them. It's a different ball game. We really learned to practice preventive medicine. DPT, diphtheria, whooping cough, and tetanus. Smallpox vaccination. Smallpox is the only thing that's been wiped out since... worldwide. There's none of that around. So no longer use smallpox. The DPT, polio, measles, mumps, and rubella. Soon, I hope again, varicella, chickenpox, Hib, which is Haemophilus influenza B bacteria. HIB, not V.
Okay.
HIB, Haemophilus influenza B bacteria.
You're going to have to spell.
Hib, the Hib vaccine. It, 1 in 200 children under the age of 5 are infected with Hib, which can give flu meningitis, acute epiglottitis, cellulitis with sepsis.
We'll have those at home because we have a medical dictionary. Don't worry.
Acute pneumonia, osteomyelitis. It's a bad actor. The vaccine's a great vaccine.
And this now is routine?
It's now part of our routine.
With the puppy shots.
Uh-huh. Okay. As a matter of fact, when it first came out, we could only use it at 2 years of age because we couldn't get antibody stimulation before that. And then it got it down to 18, they refined it enough to 18 months of age. And last July, it was refined that we could use it at 15 months of age and get antibody stimulation. As of October the 4th of this year, October 4th, 1990, we now can give it at 2 to 3 months of age. And so now, instead of locking the door of the barn after the cow escapes, we're locking the door now. Because flu meningitis, which is a bad disease, the majority of them occur between the ages of 6 and 12 months, and certainly between 6 and 18 months. So we're seeing all these things wiped out. Polio. Gosh, when I was a medical student, we used to do 8, 10, 12, 15 spinal taps a night during the season and send at least 8 or 10 up to Municipal Hospital, which is now the dental school, and then go up to see them 2 days later. Here were these kids, all they had was a stiff neck and fever, and 2 days later are either paralyzed completely or can't breathe because their diaphragm's knocked out or dead. It's just been marvelous to see these things happen.
Also, there have been, I think, fantastic advances in pediatric surgery. Now they have pediatric surgeons as a specialist.
Strictly. We've had pediatric surgeons since the day I was in practice.
Oh, really? I didn't know.
Oh, sure. Bill Sieber, who just retired, was the premier pediatric surgeon, private surgeon, and Johnny McAleese. Johnny McAleese was a marvelous man.
How do you spell that?
McAleese, premier pediatric surgeon. Matter of fact, I think he helped train Bill Sieber. And, but no, we've had pediatric surgery as long as I've been in practice. You know, what can be done is just unbelievable. The improvements in the way you can save kids. Now we're talking about prenatal surgery before they deliver. Don Nakayama.
Oh, Don?
Don Nakayama. N-A-K-A.
N-A-K-A.
N-A-K-A-Y-A-M-A. Don Nakayama is a pediatric surgeon at Children's Hospital, and one of his real interests is in surgery in a preborn child. And that hadn't been honed in yet. Still have a long way to go. They'll get there.
Okay, can we talk about prenatal care?
Prenatal
Are you involved in any of the clinics? Or?
Oh, sure. Prenatal care. I've been giving lectures, prenatal lectures at McGee Hospital since the day I went into practice. McGee is so organized with all their prenatal programs. The greatest thing to watch is the husband's involved now. The only time I saw a husband in my office was on a Saturday, because that's when they were home. But now, it's interesting the number of fathers that are here in the middle of the afternoon, because the mothers are working and the father can get disinvolved easier. But the fathers are all involved. And I think a lot of that goes to the prenatal classes that McGee has, and most of the hospitals have, where they're taught Lamage, or how to breathe, and what to do before the baby comes, and they hear all the lectures on breastfeeding, and just general pediatric topics. And fathers are very involved now. It's something to watch. But as far as our care of kids, I think our care is much better now. We do cultures on all of them, throat cultures, sore throat, they're cultured. We know what to do with strep. It used to be, when I was an intern and a resident, the whole one ward of the fourth floor, which was the kiddies floor of children's, was taken up by rheumatic fevers. And one whole corridor was with rheumatic carditis, with the inflammation, the fluid around the hearts. And thank God we don't see much of that at all anymore. They used to have a convalescent hospital called LARGE, L-A-R-G-E. It's out in LARGE, Pennsylvania. And that house had been given, I think, the Renzi House was gave that. And the kids used to go there as a rehab, cardiac rehab. And the residents would go out there just once weekly just to examine these kids and be sure everything was going well. We used to love that because we'd get a great meal instead of lousy food at Children's. And I can just go on and on about the type of care that we give now. It is so superior to what it used to be. We're able to handle so many other diseases that we couldn't handle before. One of the most exciting parts of medicine now is molecular biology. I think everything is going to start to revolve around that, the immune response. Cancer, the answer to cancer is going to be molecular biology. Genetics, that's all part of molecular biology. Genetics in pediatrics, we're now going to be able to, I think, used to worry us, what are we doing with these genes? Are we going to build a super race? Well, it has nothing to do with super race. We're going to be able to eliminate certain things through genetic engineering.
How about that, the disease the two is chewing, get Tay-Sachs? Is that one of those that would be?
Tay-Sachs would be part of it, yeah. Yeah.
Those kind of things. Uh-huh. The anemias, the black skin, the
sickle cell.
And that can be
possibly... We hope that'll all be manipulated.
Isn't that fantastic?
We hope that'll all be manipulated along the way. But if I were a young buck, my primary focus right now would be on molecular biology. I read everything I can to this day on molecular biology, because it's all new. It's all new to me. We never had this in school, mainly because I never had it. It's all been the last 10 years, and the last 5 years that it's really exploded. And it's, that's the thing about medicine. It's so dynamic that there's always something new to hang your hat on.
Do you want to talk about contraception, AIDS, teenage pregnancies, the things that are not under control?
Yeah, well, contraception, as far as I'm concerned, has to be taught to these children. But I think it has to be taught under the concept, this is not to say, this is the way everything should be done. I think they still have to realize that sex should have a place in one's life for something sacred. I guess maybe I'm old-fashioned. I still feel there's a very important part of that, the sanctity of married life. However, you know that a certain number of kids are going to have intercourse no matter what. And I think in this day and age, they have to know what safe sex really is. Number one, we know that the young mothers and young fathers, the babies of those, usually are the ones that have the most problems because many of them don't get the proper prenatal care because frequently they don't go to someone and tell someone they're pregnant until they've been pregnant for some time. Or they're not mature enough in their own minds to handle their own bodies, let alone little newborns. But in addition to that, now with AIDS being as prevalent as it is, I think they have to know that condoms are necessary. One thing that worries me with the new implant drug to prevent pregnancy is that some of these kids are going to be able to figure that the only thing they're worried about is getting pregnant, and they'll use the implant because it can work for 5 years, keep you from being pregnant for 5 years, and give up on the condom idea, which is the one way we know to help control AIDS.
And other diseases also.
How
is that? They can be controlled, the old-fashioned disease.
Yeah, but there are more of them being seen every day. Yeah, one of the journals is laying over there, warning us again about congenital syphilis.
Yeah.
My God, I haven't seen congenital syphilis in years. But they're warning us what to look for again. I can remember as a medical student memorizing what congenital syphilis was. And I remember one of my mentors, no matter what diagnosis you had, part of his differential diagnosis was syphilis. And you forgot about that for years. Well, you can't anymore. Syphilis is there. Gonorrhea is there. Now, it used to be chancre when I was in the service. Chancre and chancroid was a type of venereal disease that the worst thing it did, I'll never forget, evacuating someone from Pusan, or from Incheon, where half of his penis was eaten away by the chancre. But that can be controlled these days. But there are others, chlamydia, the human papillomavirus, the HIV,
AIDS.
So that, you know, you've got the human papillomavirus, which is something which attacks the cervix of the uterus, and it is now, we know, a precursor to cancer of the cervix. So there are a lot of things that are involved here that kids have to know, and they can't learn it all from their parents because their parents don't know it all. And they have to have some way of being educated with this. But while they're being educated, I think someone still has to, I don't mean to be a Puritan or puritanical, but I think they have to realize that there are certain things they should reserve. But as long as if they're not going to reserve it, they better have safe sex.
How do you recommend them getting this information from someone other than their parents? Because it's you're
through
recommending
schools.
the school.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then of course the teachers have to be educated.
Absolutely.
To be able to deal with
it. Can't be the gym teacher that does it all.
It's got to be.
Could you then? Do you think the parents should give permission for this, Howard?
you're getting into a whole philosophical, which I can take 3 days to get through with you. Actually, when we're talking about a disease which can destroy a generation like AIDS, if a parent is in themselves not wise enough to want to protect their children and the world from such a terrible scourge, then no, I don't think I need that person's permission. Again, like in everything else in medicine, it dates back to one important thing, and that's education. You know, we can have all these wonderful things we've been talking about, all the vaccines and all the preventive medicine with all of the antibiotics, but, you know, you give yourself a family or a mother, a single parent that has to worry about a roof over his or her head and has to worry about food on their table and has to worry about clothes, the last thing they're going to worry about is medicine. So that the answer is not just what we're doing in medicine to bring it along, but the answer is right back to what we've been talking about for centuries, education, education, education. Until these people are educated, until these people are taught what to do and how to do and how dangerous things are, we're going to have a long way to go to have all the medical achievements be significant.
How do you suggest that these people are reached at the
maximum? I get back to the right school. How else?
Not the media.
Well, the media can only do so much. Sure, it's a multifaceted. You can go to media, you can go to a lot of things. But education has to be a basic education.
And
it's never too early. You just have to know how to do it.
Exactly.
And drugs is part of that whole picture also.
What's that?
The drug
scene. Well, the drug scene, you know, the kids know as much about drugs as I do.
I bet they do.
But I give them all when they get to a certain age. I don't wait till they're teenagers. I start on them when they're 10, 11, or 12 years of age because I feel that's when when you can get to them. Once they're into something, it's tough to reverse it. I tell them I'm not talking to them specifically, my adolescent exams. I'm not talking, but I'm talking generally. Number one, I tell them that if they really want to increase the chance of them getting cancer of the lung, that they should not smoke just one pack, but two packs a day. And I tell them if they want to increase the chance of a coronary heart attack, that they shouldn't just smoke one pack, but two packs. And I tell them that it's just plain dumb to smoke. If they want to smoke, smoke, but just know they're dumb. And the drugs, I sort of gloss over and say, look, you're given all this information on drugs. I'm not going to waste your time or mine going through it because few minutes I can go over with them, I'll be able to tell you all that, but that's dumb. If you need drugs to do something, you need help. You need help to prevent you from needing it to do something. And I tell them how important it is not to get into drugs. And the third thing is the sex bed.
Okay.
And I tell them all that.
Let's get back to you. Do you have any hobbies?
Yeah.
Tell us.
I love gardening, play golf, used to be a stamp collector, but that's been years ago when I was a kid. I have so many things to do that I really haven't had time to really do more than just the things I can do around the house, the gardening, the golf. I guess my hobbies have just been honing in on things that I enjoy. If I would ever... Beverly would like me to, but it won't happen. If I would ever decide to retire, there are many, many things I can do and go into. But I don't have the specific hobby of building something as many people do. I'm not. Beverly does.
What does she do?
Anything. She can do anything.
Makes things.
She can do anything. Yeah. She's my custodian.
Are you lucky?
Yeah, very.
Boy. Is she an electrician too?
I won't let her do electrical.
Okay.
She won't do windows either.
how about vacations?
Yeah, we love them together.
Special places that you
We've been a lot of places.
Do you have a vacation home?
No, we are not having a vacation. And we've discussed it. I think when you have a vacation home, you tend to go only to your vacation home. We just came back from a trip, as a matter of fact. We were in Santa Fe and Tucson. Had never been to either place. And we get around weekends in New York from time to time, which is not my favorite place. I can only afford it for a weekend. And the latest trip to Santa Fe and Tucson, as I told you, we were fortunate enough to have these very, very close friends from California who have never forgotten their old friends. There was a gal that Beverly grew up with in Indianapolis from the time they were infants, and they still have a marvelous relationship, as do I. And her husband started out about the time I started out in medicine as a builder out there. Of course, he just kept going in his building, and I did very well in pediatrics, but you figure the financial rewards. He's a past president of AIPAC, which is, you know, it's the American Israel Affairs, it's the PAC. Probably one of the most influential organizations in the world for helping.
Are they in Tucson?
No. You mean our friends?
Yeah.
No, they live in Beverly Hills. But through them, when they charter yachts, we've been on many trips. We're in Greece with them.
Very nice.
On a charter. We met them in Venice 1 year, and the yacht met us there and took us across the Yugoslavian coast for 2 weeks. Went down the years.